You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
We didn't win by a lot, but we won by enough, and that's all that counts.
The people of Michigan looked into the hearts of the candidates, and all I have to say is, I love you back.
You figure out what you can agree on, and that's not what is happening here in the Senate.
His strategy was to blame me. Oh, don't worry. Breitbart's our regular whipping boy.
There are some of the voices from the top stories of the past 7 days. That clearly was not all that happened this week. Joining us now to talk about maybe some of the things we missed, our panel of social, political, and pop culture experts. Farai Chidea, journalist and blogger at Farai.com. Ron Christie, takeaway contributor and Republican political strategist. And a newcomer to our Follow Friday, Katie Halper, a blogger at KittyHalper.com. Hello, welcome to all. You've made it. It's Friday.
We did it.
That's right. I want to start. We began that little mashup of voices there by talking about the primaries in Arizona and Michigan, and that's where I want to start. Ron, you and I talked about this a little earlier in the week, and Farai, let's bring the other two ladies in on this conversation. There's probably a good chance at this point, don't you agree, that Super Tuesday is not going to end this GOP nominating race, right?
I don't think it will. I think Governor Romney has certainly solidified his position, at least with the Republican establishment, of being the front runner. But there's still a lot of folks out there, Celeste, who say, is he conservative enough? Can he close the deal? And will he be a formidable opponent for President Obama? So I think Governor Romney is certainly the fellow to watch as we head into Super Tuesday, but I don't think he's going to walk away hands down with the nomination following that contest.
So Farai and Katie, what does this mean? Could it be possible that we could have a GOP nominating race that extends all the way to the convention in Florida?
It is possible. I mean, you have to remember, for example, Newt Gingrich has pretty much been counted out, but he's doing some of his own political action, like running robocalls against Santorum. And so there's always a chance that not so much that Gingrich or Ron Paul will surge ahead, but that they could throw a spanner into the works that will affect the overall dynamic. Because it used not to be a Santorum-Romney race.
Right.
It was a Gingrich-Romney race. And then, you know, it was a Romney race. And, you know, I mean, I realize the limits of my predictions. I really do.
I think that it'll be interesting to see, since Mitt Romney owns so many homes, it'll be interesting to see how he does in each of his countless home states.
Home states? That's an interesting question instead. Indeed. Let's talk about another political story this week, and that is Olympia Snowe stepping down. You know, Katie, this is a person that is well-respected by both sides of the aisle. What does it mean for our political situation that that Olympia Snowe can't take it anymore?
Right. It means that if you're a moderate, there's no place for you in Republican politics, sadly. I think that her stepping down made me respect her even more. But I think, you know, you have that, and you have the Blunt Amendment, which is basically not only a scary amendment for women, but for everyone. It was so stupid, that amendment, because basically it was saying that employers or insurance companies could decide to not cover anyone just because they have a moral objection to it, which means, of course, I could not cover someone because they were religious and I'm an atheist, in theory, right?
Right.
I mean, it was so overly it was so ambiguous. The language was so ambiguous. And the irony is, this is the party that's talking about not overreaching. I mean, this is a total government overreach. They seem to overreaching is fine if it's in the areas of the ovaries.
Farai, is this the impression you get, that Olympia Snowe stepping down means the end of compromise?
Well, it's not the end of compromise, but what it is the exodus of some of the classier players. You know, I mean, I do think that it's got to be, I've often thought that, what must it be like to work in an office where half of your coworkers are out to get you? And that's one way that I think of Congress, right? You know, and the House and Senate. And so I think that it's got to be frustrating. There are a lot of people who hang in there for a long time, but I wouldn't be surprised if some other people consider whether or not this platform is the best one for them to make change.
Well, we've already had a number of people who've left Congress because they said they couldn't take it before. But with Olympia Snowe's departure and Nelson of Nebraska, that's both moderates, the moderates and the Democrat and the Republican side as well, which is a little bit frightening. Let's talk then about the loss of Andrew Breitbart. Extremely sudden. I mean, if nothing else, it was a shocker, was it not? I mean, Ron Christie, were you as surprised as I was at this news?
stunned. You know, I'm stunned on many levels. You know, he was born in 1969. I was born in 1969. It makes you immediately recognize that this could very well be your last day on Earth. Live it to the fullest. But beyond that, Celeste, I think if you look at Rush Limbaugh as being the force for conservative radio, I looked at Andrew Breitbart as being one of the galvanizing forces for internet presence for conservatives. He was very outspoken. He was the fellow that liberals loved to hate. He was the guy that conservatives loved to listen to and to sort of take the pulse that he was watching and listening to. So it's a loss for our political discourse, and one that I think will be felt for many, many years to come.
And Katie Halper, you're a blogger at katiehalper.com. Farai, you're a blogger. How was Andrew so successful on the internet?
Well, I think that you have to remember he was a businessman who really understood aggregation before a lot of people looked into it. So the Breitbart empire was first built not on original content, but on aggregation, on him being one of the first entities to really pull together the vast amounts of content that were flowing through the internet. He also, although very much a partisan warrior, particularly in the Sherrod case, was someone who helped found the Huffington
right.
Post. So he was someone who did infrastructure and later became more of the partisan right-wing warrior and was not so nice about it to a lot of people and was viewed as doing selective cuts of video. I wish his family well. I do think that we have to look at how Breitbart's decision-making basically flew in the face of a lot of the ethical rules of what we consider journalism when it came to his video cutting of web video.
And in fact, I think Shirley Sherrod was suing him. Go ahead, Katie.
Right. But what's interesting is that Shirley Sherrod, because she is such a woman of such integrity, actually expressed her condolences to Andrew Breitbart's family, which I thought was really moving and impressive. I actually got into some Twitter fights with Andrew Breitbart. I have the honor of having him called me a PC totalitarian. And I also met him at Netroots Nation. It was the night that Wiener finally stepped down. I ran into him in Minnesota. And I have some photos with him.
You know, Ron, not all of the eulogies of Andrew Breitbart were nice, though. I wonder what your reaction was to see the immediate reaction. Sometimes I thought a little disrespectfully gleeful.
I was very disappointed to see that. You know, you might want to be a gladiator with someone for political thoughts or their views or whatnot, but you know, when you step off the airwaves or when you put your Twitter handle down, you need to respect people as individuals. And the hatred and the vitriol of folks saying, "Oh, Andrew Breitbart died today. I'm ecstatic," I thought was really disgusting. It's just really,
that was disappointing
really
to me too.
Yeah,
it's just an indicative nature of where we are with our political discourse.
I thought it was also disturbing. I mean, the thing that was also frustrating though is that so many of these people who, and I'm not talking about you, Ron, at all. I'm talking about some people on the internet who are critical of the responses, which were disappointing, also engage in that same kind of overly personalized politics.
Can I just play a little bit of devil's advocate? And Farai, maybe you have a response to this. Breitbart was not real respectful of Ted Kennedy 3 hours after his death.
Yes.
He called him a special pile of human
yes.
refuse. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the reasons that I think, you know, I have been engaged in some form of online conversations like this since 1992, back on an old platform. And there's this, trolling. The term trolling mm-hmm. means basically looking for trouble or looking to stir things up. And Andrew Breitbart engaged in trolling, as did many of the people who disliked him. That doesn't mean that it's right. It doesn't mean that because he has passed away, all of a sudden it's open season on him. But the reality is that, I very actively watch the Twitter feed, and he would often retweet people who slammed him just to keep the conversation
yeah,
going.
Always, yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, the reality is all of us have too short on this planet. We should enjoy ourselves. I really respect Breitbart as a businessman. I'm not such a big fan of his legacy in sort of the intersection between journalism and online media, but I would never speak ill of him as a person because in the end, that's what he was, a human being who lived and died, who had a family. But all of us who are spending so much time, you know, sparking fights online, that's time we could be doing something else.
That's something I can wholeheartedly agree with. That's a bipartisan sentiment there from Fry today, journalist and blogger at Fry.com. Ron Christie is a takeaway contributor and Republican political strategist and a contributor to itsafreecountry.org. And Katie Halper, comedian and blogger at katiehalper.com. Happy Friday, guys.
Thank you. Happy Friday.
We've been talking this hour about a statement from Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner in which he talked about the privilege of being an American. What do you think?
Hi, this is John from Boston. Your immigrant from England pointed out that the privilege of being an American is to drive a big car and go to a big supermarket, buy a lot of food, and put it in their big refrigerators. This points out the fact that 4% of the world's population lives in America, but consumes 25% of the world's resources. That's the problem with America.
Give us your thoughts. Is it a privilege to be an American? And then what burden does that bring? 877-8-MY-TAKE. John Hockenberry returns next week. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.